Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I lost myself on a cool, damp night. I gave myself in that misty light. I was hypnotized by a strange delight. Under a lilac tree, I made wine from the lilac tree. I put my heart in its recipe. It makes me see what I want to see and be what I want to be. When I think more than I want to think, I do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink because it brings me back you.
Hello everybody and welcome back to a brand new season of Rule the Roost podcast. Raj is still otherwise engaged. He is actually literally engaged and as a result is often quite busy. So you're gonna be lumped with me for at least this opening, and I've enlisted the help of a Tottenham face and a good pal of mine going by the name of Phil. You might know him as At, because that's, you know, that's the age we live in now, isn't it? At Single Malt Suds on the Twitter, if I'm to go all Adam Buxton about it. But how you doing, Phil? Welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. You were first on the billing on that historic, if I say so myself, Amsterdam compilation pod. How did it feel having that honour bestowed upon you?
I mean, to be honest, I thought it was like about time. I'm surprised it took that long, to be honest, but I guess you're making up for lost time now, aren't you?
Well, that's it, mate. I'm keeping you keen, because that's how I know I can get the best juices out of you. It's like a fine wine, keeping you in that oaky barrel and just, you know what I mean? twisting the nozzle as and when. And I know you'll bring the A game. That's it.
So I will. No pressure. Are we still going to be talking about Spurs, because it's now suddenly got a bit
Orson Welles. Yeah. I'm onto wine already. It'll probably be referenced throughout this pod if anybody. So I'll get it out of the way. Basically, if any of you haven't seen Orson Welles' old Paul Masson advert, well, the outtakes of at least. Although the actual completed advert itself is equally hilarious. Just Google, fucking hell, go onto YouTube. Go onto YouTube and search for Paul Masson, Orson Welles. Because, it's probably important to get that out of the way, isn't it, Phil? Because we're going to be going back to that throughout.
Definitely, yeah. In fact, you should probably pause now and just watch it. Yeah. And then come back to us. I think that's probably
a good shout.
Smart thing to do. Yeah.
102, take two.
The French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne by Paul Masson, inspired by that same French excellence. It's fermented in the bottle, and like the best French champagne, it's vintage dated. Yes. So Paul Masson.
Do you want to fucking host this, mate? Is that, yeah. Usurping me already. You could be in Raj's DMs in a minute. Hello, mate.
Yeah, I think he's fallen off, mate. Yeah. Need some new blood in.
He knew that years ago. It's why he's not here now recording with me. He's had enough of me. Christ, that old ball bag. Leave me alone. Tottenham Hotspur. We are here to talk about Tottenham Hotspur. It's a Tottenham Hotspur podcast after all. And it's the first of the new season. Doesn't really feel like a new season, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's obviously strange times, and just to put it lightly, yeah. And it's coming hot on the heels of the mini season, I guess you have, because that's how that felt. And it just felt like it was a stone's throw away, so it was just more like a elongated international break. It felt like. Well, how many weeks was it?
Well, the post COVID
break.
Well, it wasn't even post COVID, was it? To be honest, like
the
forced mid pandemic for not commercial reasons. Honest.
No, not at all. For the good of the country's morale, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I did really enjoy it. Annoyingly, so
I did. Yeah, after the first game, I think I was struggling with the first game, seeing the team come out. Not to be like a snowflake about it, but seeing the team come out with like all their physios and staff behind them, all like in basically hazmat suits. I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a bit rank, then, wasn't it?
Yeah, then I think we went a goal up against United. I was like, all right, forget about that.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's heavy. It is. I'm not sure how many weeks it was, but yeah, like you say, it was almost like a sort of pre-season tournament, wasn't it? Like a warm-up.
Yeah.
And on reflection, Spurs did pretty well.
Yeah, so in keeping with a pre-season tournament where we usually do well, and then that gives us kind of like high expectations for the season that comes after it, which is when we're usually terrible. So set your expectations low for tomorrow and onwards.
I know, that's it, right? Like there's Spurs Statman, he put out a tweet saying that Jose Mourinho, I think he's at every club he's been at, he's undefeated on the opening day of the season. He's won all of them but one that he's drawn. So welcome to Tottenham, Jose. Does it? Well, I mean, we'll go into the game in a bit more detail a bit later on, but on a top-down level, how are you feeling going into the new season? Are you feeling quietly optimistic, or do you think you've got a decent sort of level of expectation?
I think I have no expectations. I'm just kind of, as much as I've got hard to get my head around it coming back after, during Project Restart, trademark.
I'm
just going into this thinking it's just nice to have something else to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really don't have any expectations. I see people talking about who's going to finish top four, and I just can't really get my head around it. Plus, how many times have we been, I'm 37, right? Watching Spurs for mainly my whole life, and going into each season and trying to make any sort of prediction about anything, even when teams have signed amazing players and stuff like that, it's just a fool's errand. So I've kind of learned that you just, it's not worth it. It's having any kind of expectation or trying to find some sort of idea of form or anything like that, especially now, it's not so. Yeah,
I think the thing I've been quite surprised about, like just seeing what the commentariat have been going on about and everything, is that there seems to be now this sense that, and I think this is wrapped up within the bigger picture of coronavirus, I've got a caveat this with, but it does seem to be that any of the nuance to the discussion that was, say, held with Project Restart, as in like it's going to be hard to really get a grip on what football actually means, has just kind of completely gone out the window.
Everyone's
a bit like, right, well, this is this, and this is what the top four is going to be. And I mean, it's still a really bizarre time. I mean, we're still gonna, if I'm correct in saying, like, there's still gonna be like measures put in place that if teams have, isn't it, if players are found to be positive having coronavirus, is kind of this, is there sanctions against the teams? Or
I don't know, I didn't hear about that.
Did I probably just made that up? I don't really know what's real anymore, but
great content.
But just I don't know, it just seems strange. Yeah, we're still kind of facing a season without fans in the stands, this kind of
weird
dystopian vision of like cardboard cutouts. I don't know if you saw that that image that was floating around yesterday, that somebody was saying, like, here's the vision of 2020, and it was like a baseball stadium in LA, where it was just like this hellish backdrop of wildfires, smoke, and an empty stadium with just all these like motionless cardboard spectators watching some people knocking a ball about in it, you know. It's just, yeah, it's haunting. It was horrible.
Excellent metaphor for the times we live in, I think.
Yeah.
And sports still going on despite everything in the background.
But it does go on indeed. And I think you sort of touched on it there in the respect that, like, it, I think having sort of no expectation, really. I mean, I don't think I've got no expectation. I've got a sort of level of, well, expectation that we're going to be all right. I don't think it's going to be a catastrophe. I think, and I don't mean this, I say this in a purely sporting context, because I get that it's quite a crass thing to say, but COVID really did Tottenham a favour. Like, we were massively careering. Yeah. We had about, what, like 4 fit players before, you know, everything went tits up. And, yeah. You know, so I don't believe we'd be sitting in a position where, at least having finished in a position that we did, were it not for that. And I don't want to go as far as to say that we should be thankful for it, because, you know, that's something you can't just strip the context of life away from this to suit a sporting agenda. But, you know, it did Spurs a favour, and, you know, I think we can all sort of agree on that. But it did also kind of go to show that perhaps a lot of the kind of doom and gloom mongering that followed the departure of Pochettino was probably a bit premature. That, you know, he predicted himself that we were going to have a painful rebuild, and it looks like we've come. I don't think we're fully there. Obviously, it's going to take a few seasons. It took Klopp a good few years to get Liverpool fully rolling, but, you know, I think you can start to see that we do look like something new. And there are new pieces being integrated, and we can start one of those on our first signing of the summer, who was Højbjerg. That I still actually can't spell his name. I've got on the piece of paper, my little notes I've written in front of me, I've got Højbjerg.
I think it's the O with like the line through it, right? And I don't know if that then negates the need for an I. I know that's a case in like German with Müller. And it's J's either side of the B. That's how I remember it.
Højbjerg. Højbjerg.
But I was still ending it on like a hard G. So yeah, we're all learning, mate. We're all learning.
It's José and it's Højbjerg. Well, it's probably not even that. I don't know.
And Doherty. But we get to him in a minute.
The doc. But yeah, Højbjerg, what's your general reflection on him thus far? How did you meet the transfer, first of all, and then how have you sort of felt about him from what you've seen of him in pre-season?
So if I recall, we were linked to him at the end of last season, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's when his name popped up. And immediately it's just like, yes, that's it. That's the exact player we need. Someone who's not going to cost an arm and a leg because of, you know, where we are. And, you know, again, with football as a whole having basically no money. Well, they've got enough money to pay their players, but not their staff. But anyway, that's a different matter. And just a functional player who is, you know, what our team was crying out for. And so, yes, it's one of those, when as soon as you hear the name, you're like, yep, that's fine, that's great. Again, it might not be like a headline signing, but I think that's what football fans kind of forget about. And I don't know if that's because of like this FIFA Ultimate Team, you need all like the best players in each positions and whatever. But there is certainly a point where you actually just need players who are just going to, you know, not to use a cliche, but to keep it simple. And you know that's probably doing him a bit of a disservice. You know, his mentality and the way he speaks is just the most impressive, really. And he's still, what, is he only like 23? And he's got bags of experience as well. So yeah, really pleased that we got it done quickly as well. Then that he, I think that position was the most important one to get in before pre-season started. So yeah,
I'm very happy. Like you touched on there, like he's got a lot of experience. I mean, he's come through like one of the most elite academies in world football, really, in the Bayern setup. And although people can, whatever, say, oh, well, you can't be that good. He didn't make it at Bayern. But you know, sometimes people just peak at different times, don't they? You know, and it's not a bad place to have your football foundation. And I think from what I've seen in his interviews and everything like that, he seems to be very much wired in that elite way, if you get what I mean. Yeah. He's got the... it doesn't even seem like disingenuous chat. He's got that kind of, basically, jockey, alpha-type mentality of like, let's win. We're here to win matches, you know? And you know, decent. I do quite like him. It's a very small catchment. I do think, like, from what I've seen of him in pre-season, his technique looks a little bit ropey still. He looks a little bit rusty. I don't think he's going to, like, come in and be transformative immediately. I think I had this idea that he was going to come in and suddenly, like, the midfield was going to be unlocked, and we were going to have, like, not only the midfield unlocked, but our attacking band unlocked.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly, like, it's quite a bit of pressure just to place on one lad's shoulders. But he does also, like, what I do really like about him is he looks very mobile, right? He looks quite hard, but he also looks pretty nimble. He's not just one of these, like, great plodders in midfield that, you know, he's not like this battering ram type DME player, is he? That I kind of maybe thought naively that he was, because... To be honest, I haven't really watched a lot of him in Southampton other than when we played him. Do you know what I mean? And my idea was just like, you know, he was a sort of decent version of a Danny Drinkwater sort of player. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, he's good. And like you were saying, it's there are some players that just need to be there to be functional. I think, like, a very relevant example to this at the moment is Jordan Henderson. If you look at what he contributed to Liverpool's successes over the past couple of years. Not a patch on a player like Gerrard, in my opinion, but has been more successful than has potentially been the fulcrum of the team in some ways, which seems quite bizarre to say, but there you have it. So,
And I think in the first pre-season game, he seemed to be playing quite far forward than what I had expected him. Again, I kind of saw him as just someone who's going to be disciplined and sit, and, you know, obviously Lo Celso wasn't playing beside him. I just see him as you touched on there, that he is the sort of player, again, doesn't need to be particularly flashy. It just needs to have someone who's disciplined and can marshal people around him and be that platform for our attacking unit, which is one of the best in the league on paper, but we just need the kind of structure behind them. So again, I don't expect him to be kind of charging up the pitch and whatever. Again, it might be doing him a disservice just to say he's there to break up play, but, you know, he is there to kind of just be that anchor. I think, again, I don't really do the old tactic stuff, but there you go.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think that the, like, sort of like as a wider point, I do think, because I'm guilty of this myself, I'm not saying that this is like some failing in other people that I, an intellectualist, so above, but I mean, I am a little bit.
I was about to call you on that,
but our attacking options are some of the best in the league and thus in Europe, in the world, probably. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we can lose sight of that we're always looking for like that big marquee that's going to kind of push us on in that level. But when you think about it, like, at least Son and Kane would be a massive marquee signing for any club in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, they would be gargantuan, game-changing acquisitions for, I would honestly say, any club in the world. And then behind that, the tier down from that, I get that there's, you know, there's still contrasting opinions on him, but Dele Alli, for my money, is still a very talented footballer who could go on to somewhere like Bayern and you know, reinvent himself, have a brilliant career. We all know he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, we've got
Bergwijn, Lucas in there. I mean, Lucas, again, we compare him to the likes of Son and Kane and get a bit down on him. Myself, as much as anyone, he frustrates me a lot. But again, a very talented footballer who would, you know, command the place in most squads in the Premier League, I would say. Yeah, you know, we've got a lot of talent up there that's very hard to improve upon. But what I feel that, you know, maybe it was a failing of Levy, maybe it's a failing of Pochettino, who knows? But it seems to be that whether it's by circumstance or whether it's by design, at the moment Tottenham are very concerned with improving the baseline of the squad, you know, as opposed to being like, how can we make these top end acquisitions? Actually, let's see, we've got quite a lot of dross or not a lot of depth in a lot of other positions, and we can actually just up the baseline and then, as you say, provide more of a foundation for that exceptional talent that we already have to flourish. Whilst we're on Højbjerg, were you disappointed to see Cole Walker-Peters go in the end?
Not disappointed, no. I think just because it was part of that deal, I think that was an excellent... It wasn't a direct exchange, was it? But I think that both clubs got a good deal out of that.
It was very bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you don't get straight player swaps anymore anyway, do you? But I don't know, for whatever reason. But I think it's a good move for him as well. I don't know what it was with him. He never inspired a hell of a lot of confidence when I saw him. All right, you can argue that he didn't, you know, get a clear run in the team, but there was just something that wasn't quite the level that I think that we wanted or needed or thought we needed or whatever. So he's good enough to be a starting player for a team like Southampton, but you know, his career could have gone down the pan if he was battling third choice right back at Spurs. That didn't really make any sense. So I think that all in all, it's good for everyone involved.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because, you know, it's hard to know how much kind of the whatever led to Pochettino's decision to not really have a lot of confidence in him. So it's hard to know really how much that kind of, I would probably say, lack of faith a lot of the time in him from Pochettino has impacted his confidence and impacted his career as a result, because I always sort of felt that technically speaking there's a decent player in Cole Walker-Peters, that we saw flashes of it he made a massive mistake, you know, in a crucial away game at the Nou Camp against, you know, an £80 million attacker, and gave away a goal. But then for the rest of that Barcelona game in the Champions League, he had a brilliant performance. He was very composed, and we saw him in, like, kind of, you know, the Newcastle game start of last season, or maybe the season before, when he started the game and he was man of the match, and he just looked brilliant. But I mean, the only way I can put this is in a gammon way, is that he just seems like a bit of a pussy. He always seemed quite timid, you know. That was always my kind of thing with him, that he just seemed, do you mind if I tackle you? And it's almost a bit like Sessegnon at the moment, where they just seem to like second guess everything that they're doing, and he just seemed like he was too much in his own head. And you know, it's a shame that it didn't work out, because, like I say, I do think there is a decent player there, and I still think Aurier's a catastrophe, really. But it hasn't worked out, and hopefully, you know, he'll have a new lease of life at Southampton, because they do seem to really like him. The fans were buzzing, if Twitter's kind of anything to go by, when they announced it. He seemed really happy, so maybe that's just the new lease of life he needs. I mean, I never really want to buy too much into this kind of, like, 2 years down the line, if he suddenly gets bought by Man City. Everyone does it. Ah, look, you know, Spurs let him go.
No, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't, though, does it? You know, sometimes it just, for all we know, Højbjerg's going to be great for us, and it doesn't mean we're going to be like, ah, Bayern. You know, it just
imagine having a nerve.
Yeah, no, exactly right. They'd be like, yeah, all right, that's a nice one.
Yeah, who? What?
Won? Carling Cup. Yeah, great. Well, what is it? Carabao Cup now, isn't it? Yeah. Well done. But yeah, I mean, it was a bit of an old school pre-season. That's what I sort of wanted to touch on as well.
Yeah.
I quite like that. I mean, I know that there's a lot of anger about fixture pile-up and what have you at the moment. And I do think there's a bit of a kind of selective memory there, as in, you know, usually we're off in America 4 or 5 days before the season starts anyway. So much as a trip to Bulgaria is probably not ideal, I don't think it's as aberrative as people make out, shall we say, that players have a certain amount of strain placed on them at the start of the season, unique to the Europa League, I should say. The circumstances in which we're playing at the moment are very much an aberration. This was it, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday for 2 weeks in a row, which is pretty horrendous. But what's promising as far as that's concerned is that in this pre-season, probably more so than I can recall for a very long time, we saw a lot of youngsters blooded, and quite a few of them look pretty handy.
Mm-hmm.
I've just written down here, basically, Kirkin, because for my money, he's the one that I can see why we're not really looking at or have been linked to many other left backs, because the lad looks quite mustard, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he was highly regarded end of last season, wasn't he? Didn't he made the bench a couple of times, I seem to recall. It feels like so long ago now.
It doesn't.
But, he didn't let anyone down at all, did he? And he just looked, as you say, just kind of confidence, had that self-belief, you know, going back to kind of Kyle Walker-Peters, that element of not being quite so sure of himself on the ball. I don't know, that's just kind of a sense you get. There's probably hundreds of examples where he was completely confident, but Kirkin?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
All right. Well, whoever he is, he just seemed very comfortable and decent. And I think you're right. I think there's no need to kind of necessarily sign a left back. I mean, if one comes available, I think we probably will, and we can, then I think we will. But that's not a huge area of concern for me. We've got Davis, who is, again, solid. Sessegnon, who again is a bit of a timid lad at the minute, I think, but it's not an area that I think we have to be hugely concerned about. But yeah, but Sirkin has been good, and I kind of expected him to be as well, if you know what I mean. I know that's a bit strange to say when it's like a young player who's never really stepped foot on the pitch before, but you just get a sense the way some players are talked about and mentioned in press conferences or whatever, that they have what it takes to kind of at least make that first step into the first team and then see where they go from there.
Yeah, I think we're kind of like, you know, I think you, whatever, I mean, there'll be a debate that will rage on about how good they are for an elite kind of club and whatever. But like you're saying there, you know, there wasn't a lot of fanfare around like Winks or Skip, for example. They were just kind of like lads that were like solid, that stepped up into the first team, and you're like, yeah, they look like a Premier League footballer, you know. How transformative or not they are for Spurs and whatever, you know, if they're at a level we need, and I'm not really concerning myself with that. I'm just saying that they look like a viable squad option, and that's what Kirkin looks like to me. He looks like, as you've said there, just assured. He just looks like that sort of lad that just knows, yeah, I'm good enough to play at this level. I just am, you know.
I think, as you said about having to go to Bulgaria, I think that is suddenly a very much less of a difficult place to go. I know like traveling there is going to be a pain, but I assume there's not going to be any, again, I haven't looked this up, but I assume there's no fans allowed in stadiums in Bulgaria either. So that suddenly means that the atmosphere
there usually
is...
isn't anyway, is there, out there, because they're all no.
they've all been banned.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's suddenly not that kind of cauldron atmosphere that you might think, oh, it could be tricky if we don't put the right team out. So that does open up the space for players like him to get a run out, and, you know, doesn't necessarily put the strain on other areas of the squad that we have to make everyone travel.
I quite like it seemed to be, anyway, from the friendlies, at least, that Mourinho's sort of... I don't even think he's trying to work Sessegnon out. I just think he sees him as quite a versatile option, because it seemed to be that some games he'd start at left back and then Kirkin would come on and he'd push him further forward, take Son off, you know. So I think it doesn't hurt to have a player like Sessegnon that can operate pretty much down the left flank. In my head, I still see him as like a more attacking kind of option, really.
I think so, yeah.
Even though he was initially a left back, and he sort of said not long ago, really, he sees himself as a left back. He grew up watching Ashley Cole and everything like that. But I don't know, it's hard to say, isn't it? But, you know, I think given that we know that Mourinho likes this kind of approach of, you know, a sort of back four that turns into a back three as the game progresses. We were only really able to see that on the right last year with Aurier, with Davis moving inside. But potentially now with Sessegnon, you know, we might be able to do something like Sanchez, Dier, and Alderweireld at the back, who become that back three. So it's maybe Dier starting on the right, or Sanchez starting on the right, if you like.
But yeah. That's how it should be, really. I mean, this idea of like a static formation doesn't make any sense. You want players where mid-game, with or without the ball, you can shift and set up differently as the game progresses. But going back to like pre-season and your point about us not flying to America to play this pre-season tournament, which is like still a tournament, so you kind of still have to play your best players because it's a PR exercise and it's
against
televised.
The old, Kansas City Wizard sleeves and
and then suddenly you've got to win it, and then so the manager has less kind of opportunity to just kind of try things out. I mean, obviously, you know, we played youngsters in those tournaments as well, but they're playing at home, and I think maybe this is Mourinho's approach to preseason anyway, that he would just be like, no, this is just a chance for me to try things out. Just see players in certain situations and positions, and so I think it's been a positive in that sense as well. Again, we shouldn't keep beating this drum for COVID's a good thing, but it's just trying to look on the bright side of things, isn't it?
That's it, mate. Silver linings and all that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Joe Hart, I mean, I think everyone's probably sick to death of everyone talking about... I think it's been the most seismic third-choice keeper signing in the fucking history of football. People losing their arses, other people losing their arses defending him. I mean... You can debate all you like about the, you know, a voice about the place and what have you, but you know, I personally feel it is a thing. I think we've kind of one of the. Everyone's done this one to death. Can't really be asked to go on about all or nothing too much, but I think one of the things that has become clear for me, at least, is that love him as I do. there is just something to seeing Harry Kane shout at the team, sort of young lad who does lead by example, is a driven, fantastic footballer. But I just feel that, you know, when he's shouting, like, come on, let's fucking have it, and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of lads in there being like, well, who are you to tell me? You know, you ain't one fuck all. Whereas someone like Lloris doing it, World Cup winner, they are suddenly all like, oh, shit. Like,
Hugo's
back. You know, when Hugo came back and he started shouting at everyone, the lads are all suddenly like, oh, shit. And then you're like, that's why, like, you know, again, we can debate the morality of this, but that's why he wasn't stripped of captaincy, because he's the captain. He commands captain, that dressing room. You can see it. And I still get an air of, there's a little bit of, fuck off, Harry, your job's worth. Do you know what I mean? Like, when he sort of tries to give him the right act.
Yeah. Bless him. I don't think he necessarily kind of inspires the same sort of commanding presence or confidence as Hugo obviously does. And just on Joe Hart, I have to say, like, from the outside of looking at Joe Hart's career, whenever he was on, like, TV, you know, whatever, I couldn't stand him. I absolutely couldn't stand him. Just his demeanour. So I've never been, like, a Joe Hart fan. You know, I've never really given him a second thought, to be honest. Like, whenever I've seen him grinning after winning the League Cup or whatever, I've just been like, I hate to have him at Spurs. Just that, because of the character that I kind of thought he was.
Fucking shampoo.
But then signing him as a... Yeah. And then just signing him as a third choice keeper. Me, even the person who, you know, when we played Burnley at Wembley, when we beat him in the last minute, when Joe Hart was like wasting time from the 30th minute or something, I lost control of myself and gave him absolute pelters. So my point is that I'm not in any way a fanboy of Joe Hart, if there is such a thing, but he's third choice keeper, mate. Like, why are you losing your mind about it? So when we linked with it, I was like, all right, makes sense, homegrown, whatever. But from pre-season, what we've seen, I want to say, I don't think we need fans back in the stadium. Just stick Joe Hart in the stands, right? Because the noise he makes, and it's something you don't even notice that you didn't have until it's kind of in front of you, right? Mm. That kind of, like, commanding presence. So,
yeah.
And people get so wound up about things like this, and it's just like, go and read a book or something, mate.
Have a wank. Or at least just have a poo and a cup of tea, you know?
Yeah. Like, just do something else other than what you're doing right now, because it's a waste of time. They're not going to read your reply on Spurs Official and be like, oh, shit, hang on a minute, this guy really doesn't like Joe Hart. Joe, mate, sorry, it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
It's not. Just come on.
I just also, just on a very base level, I think there's that kind of thing of, like, when somebody like Joe Hart shouts at you on a human level, and you get that sort of, like you might do in a moment of, like, oh, fuck off, who are you to tell me what to do? And you can be like, but like, I won two Premier Leagues, mate. Like, so, you know, maybe listen.
And
I can't remember, you remember there's that little exchange a few years back when, I think when he was a bit more cocky, a bit more full of himself, when Dele Alli skinned Ashley Young or something, there's that sort of infamous, like, oh, you got your Zimmer frame, Ash, or something. And I think Young replied, like, no, I've just got my Premier League winners medals, mate. And you're just kind of like, that little, like, zinger, innit? Like,
no comeback from that.
No, and, you know, maybe, like, I don't want it to be too toxic. And I do think there's a level of pantomime to, you know, let's be honest, Mourinho knows the cameras are on. Like, all this, you got to be nasty cunts and all this type of stuff. I think there's a level of bravado.
Pantomimes are shite, mate. When was the last time you went to a pantomime? Terrible. Absolute weird.
He's behind
British nonsense.
It is twee, isn't it?
Absolute load of shite.
I think the people who like pantomimes are the people that get angry about Royal Britannia not being sung at the proms anymore. Look, there's a place at the prom. I'm just going to touch on this now, right? Because everyone knows this is a noncy, snowflakey, whatever you want to call it, melty pod. So, you know, Royal Britannia, right? it's about fucking slavery and all this shit. So if you want to start going on about, like, we ended slavery and, you know, be like, great, Britain's awesome because we ended slavery, stop fucking singing songs about it. The song's shite as well, anyway. There's a lot of very good patriotic songs that you can get behind that aren't fucking twee, jam sandwich eating, milky tea, scoffing fucking fodder. Shut up. Like, just shut the fuck up. Anyway.
Yeah, it's got the word never, like, three times. Back to back. That's just lyrically that's terrible.
Bad songwriting, isn't it? It's like the old, remember that old Razor Light song? I really, really wish I could be somewhere else. I really, really wish you could write a better song, Borrow Your Cow. Yeah. sorry about that. There's another one that's been kicked out of the Proms. What's the other one that they want to get rid of? The PC they. Elite.
I don't know. That's the sort of thing that these days I just ignore the bullshit with it. Just like I don't care about the Proms. Nah. Just not going to watch it.
Nah. I like Nimrod. Nimrod's a good one. And Jupiter and all that. I think those are decent patriotic. Quite like Jerusalem as well, if I'm honest. You know? Reminds me of Gren when she was going, when she had dementia. She's probably senile. She'd just burst into singing Jerusalem sometimes. I'd sing along with her. And she'd get quite
full happy. Crusade regalia.
Yeah, and she'd come back a bit out of the fog, you know. It was quite one of those nice things. If I was more cynical, I'd have taken a video and tweeted it, you know what I mean? And being like, look.
Yeah.
But I don't do that because it's weird. No. Everyone copes in their own way. Sorry. Anyway. This is like, see,
that was the most disingenuous caveat anyway.
The thing is, right, we're 38 minutes in now. So
yeah.
Anyone who's actually invested in Roll the Rooster still listening and will be used to this type of shit. That's the way I justify it. What I've already done is caught the kind of like 15 minutes, 20 minutes or so that inflates the stats. And I've done the football chat. This is where it all goes off the rails. Do you know what I mean? So this is where you can start swearing and doing all your sort of sexist stuff, mate, that you say to me off air. You know what I mean? Like, Phil doesn't really do that, full disclosure.
I'm the one running you in.
Yeah, generally speaking.
Not even from like you can't say that, but just a mate.
Yeah, can't mate. Neck in. Yeah, have a word. Yeah.
Have a quiet pint. What's wrong with you? Always summit with you, isn't it?
Why are you standing on the table, mate? You know. Yeah.
Stop singing Rule Britannia and get
put your shirt back on. Yeah. Like no one needs to see it. Right. Right, you jumped ahead earlier, right?
Sorry.
So you need to wind your neck in early when you brought up fucking Doherty, mate, right? Ahead of schedule, but nah.
But the point I was making, and shows you weren't actually listening, but it's Doherty.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
But I didn't say Doherty, did I? Maybe I did.
No, you said Doherty. It's in between the two.
Oh, what is it?
Doherty.
Like a... Oh, is it like a guttural? Yeah. Like one of them.
It's exactly that, yeah.
Doherty. Doherty. Do you have to say it like Doherty?
Doherty. It's like you skip over the C.
Doherty. Doherty.
Yeah.
Matt Doherty. Now I spoke to as you do as a progressive, kind of liberal minded, not one to stereotype whatever person. As soon as we signed him, I asked my Irish mate, is he good? and my Irish mate, shout out to Jack Gallagher. It's probably Gallagher as well, isn't it? If we're talking about Doherty, it's probably Gallagher. But Jack, anyway.
I have to say, I don't actually know if that Doherty stuff is true, right? I just realised I was explaining, but, you know, I haven't actually bothered to check it out. Oh, anyway, carry on.
I see.
I'm probably right,
but Jack, he's a good lad. Actually, he's a writer for 90 Min, so read his stuff. But he reckons low key that he could be one of the signings of the summer. I've no idea at all how we got that over the line for so cheap. To be honest, it feels bent, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just gonna say I've got some idea, and I think it's the fact that it's the Wolves. George Mendes Mourinho connection. That's, I mean, I don't know if they have they signed anyone, because I thought that's what was going to happen, that they were going to ship him out to do Jose a favour and then get a replacement left back in. right back, sorry. But I haven't, again, I haven't really paid attention to what Wolves are doing, but so I don't know. But yeah, a great deal for us. What did he have, like 2 years left on his contract?
I think so. We got him for peanuts, though, didn't we? Like 12 mil?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Like, it almost insultingly low, but, you know, great. And, you know, you say bent, and football's been bent for decades, and I think that we've always been a bit too...
probably the past century,
Lily
really,
White. Yeah. Ever since someone charged someone to go and watch it, right?
Ever since someone moved from Woolwich and then paid to not get relegated.
But yeah, I think brilliant. I think I'm quite surprised because he has been really good for the last couple of seasons for Wolves, and you know, he's got really good sort of attacking returns. Don't know in terms of position if he was more of a wing back for Wolves. I think he was. It depends how we're going to play him, but just an excellent solid sign. I'm all for these like square headed blokes that we're signing. Joe Hart, Højbjerg, Matt Doherty, just square headed functional blokes.
I could imagine them having like bollocks shaped like cola cubes.
You know what I mean? Very, very, very just neat and just sits in there like Lego.
Yeah. That's it.
Clicks together.
Right. Yeah. He's like you say, he's sort of like one of those players you'd never really considered. Like, you always look at him from the outside and just think someone like, almost like a sort of Leighton Baines was back in the day, where you just sort of like, yeah, he's a solid player. I could see him, I could at some point foreseeably see somebody like Man City or a Chelsea just being like buying them, and everyone being like, oh yeah, that makes sense, really.
Surprised they managed to prize him away from Everton, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which makes his fee, again, even if he had a couple of years left on his contract and he's 28, that's still really low. But, you know, good for us.
And he sort of ticks the boxes of, you know, he's predominantly an attacking player. Because I saw, again, it's, you know, it's Twitter, so you take it with a pinch of salt, but it is just interesting to have a bit of kind of context to things. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be in some of the more rational discussions, a lot of Wolves fans were saying that Spurs have got another thing coming if they think they've signed a solid right back in him, but as a kind of more like winger, he's mm-hmm. mustard, you know. It seems to be there's a touch of the Ories about him, defensively a bit suspect and what have you, but, you know, that's as we've seen, as we sort of touched on earlier, we don't play really with a right back or a left back potentially, seemingly. So, you know,
that's an interesting point, but point me to one club who could say of their fullbacks in particular that they're great at attacking and they're great at defending.
Yeah, I mean, even Trent,
you rarely get that. Yeah, even Trent, you're like, mate, one of the best attacking players in the league. Defensively, question marks.
He's
ropey
as fuck. I honestly think, I know it sounds ridiculous, you know, how dare anyone critique anything to do with Liverpool. And Trent Alexander-Arnold's a generational talent. Like, he's one of the, you know, top five, probably top three in his position in the world now. Were, you know, the Galacticos and Barcelona, whoever else, on a level above Liverpool and Premier League teams, which I'm not so sure they are anymore, you would see him being like a Real Madrid type, you know, marquee signing. But, you know, Liverpool are probably best team in the world at the moment. I still think he's people target him. He's ropey as fuck defensively, you know?
Yeah.
And like you say, yeah, then on the flip side, you got someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who's a fine defensive player, but going forwards, not so good. So, you know.
Yeah. But again, that's just my point about perspective, isn't it? Yeah. So all, you know, it's the same everywhere. But I just think good, solid, again, solid signing, not breaking the bank, because again, we're probably skint, or in some respects skint. We need these kind of foundational players, as it were, to just kind of, as Poch said, rebuild. You know, Højbjerg might do great for a couple of seasons and then do a bit of a Palacios, sorry, or Wanyama when they were brilliant, and then suddenly the team sort of overtook them, and then they just stood out as being muck, or you know, their form dipped off. So
it's a bit of Scott Parker as well, right? Like he sort of came in, gave Modric, and maybe Højbjerg is a bit of a Scott Parker, you know, could be that sort of thing. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's an interesting one. I mean, there's one massive hole here, which ain't my great yabbering gob for once. And that's a striker, an ongoing conversation at Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, it's a big one to unpack this. So give us your hot takes first of all, mate.
My view is that when we were being linked with players like earlier on, like Deeney or, and to some respects, Callum Wilson, or that's probably doing him a disservice, but I kind of envisioned it. We needed like a slightly more mobile Llorente type figure. And then it went from that kind of backup striker who can come on and just take the pressure off Kane here or there to then a second striker. Someone who's going to score 10, 15 goals a season or something that we're going to be then sort of spending 25, 30 mil on, that sort of bracket. And I don't know if we've got ourselves confused. I mean, yeah, all right, great. Having another fantastic striker who's not as good as Kane, but few are, if any, would be good. But I thought it was quite, again, we just need like a functional player in that position. A backup striker isn't a primary concern for most teams, just in the same way a third choice keeper isn't. So I don't know why we haven't managed to just say, not that, oh, they're due, but kind of. The fact that we're going into the game tomorrow with, again, Kane as our only out-and-out striker in the squad, is just a bit bizarre. And all right, you can say that no one's going to want to play second fiddle to Kane, and you're like, well, some players would.
Yeah,
Llorente did. Troy Deeney, for instance, might. I mean, I think he's actually a bit too far gone now. You know, look at how he was the end of last season. He could barely even play for them in their running, because I know he probably fell out with Pearson, but I think his knees were basically imploding. So I don't know. I mean, what's the latest? So we saw it was Milik, and then Deeney's name popped up.
Daka,
who's now off the book.
Yeah.
Edouard from Celtic, who, again, feels like, oh, hang on a minute. We're getting some. I mean, I don't know a hell of a lot about him, but you go from thinking, what's this great striker we're going to get, to then suddenly back to this idea of just the body.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know too much about Edouard, so
I think he's might supposed to be quite tidy.
Yeah. So, but again, so I don't really know what is kind of a bit concerning. Again, talk too much about transfers because don't know the workings of things. Don't know who we've been linked in and where we are with the deals or whatever. But just again, feels a bit strange that we're now, the names keep getting kind of thrown out. And again, you know, caveat ITK and journalists, whatever. But we've known about this position, so it felt like it could have been quite a straightforward one to do. All right, Callum Wilson, you know, he would have been really good, and I think he would have been better than, you know, just a body in that position. But you can understand why he's gone to Newcastle to play every game, injury permitting, so fair play to him. So what are your thoughts? Like, it just again feels like we're, I don't know, scratching around for someone when we had our targets and not pulled the trigger. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my immediate thoughts are, you know, Christ, how ungrateful we were when we had Llorente on the bench. You know, that people would moan about the times when we had Llorente to call upon, who, on reflection, had a fine Tottenham career, in my opinion. You know, he did everything he needed to do when called upon. Like that, it just seems strange. People kind of, a lot of the criticism at the time seemed to be, oh, he looks a bit rusty, his touch is a bit this. It's like, but you know, he sits on the bench for most of the season, and he's happy to do so. But he's got experience. He knows how to play, but he definitely knew how to play in big games. That's something you can say of him. And he was just a very talented player. It's a shame that we couldn't have held on to him really before he went off to Napoli. I think he might be a free agent again now. And to be honest, I wouldn't be overly averse to just getting him in because.
To be honest, mate, I wouldn't be surprised if it's happening. It's like Michel Vorm going and being like, oh, hi.
Because, I mean, we are kind of at the point now where ultimately, like you say, it's bizarre. And I'm sort of letting it wash over me to a degree because. You know, as much as it would be nice to bring in somebody like Daka, who I sort of thought, this feels like one we get done. Like, you know, we've been linked with Josh King and Wilson and Watkins. That there's a lot of noise around this and people are getting, why are we losing out to Aston Villa and all this sort of thing? And I'm always a bit like, well, you know, if we really wanted a player, we're really that convinced, we're not going to lose out to Aston Villa, are we? So get a fucking grip, you know?
I mean, and you got to remember that the player does have a decision as well. Do you want to play second fiddle to
But I mean, there's also that difference, right, as being like, all right, yeah, you know, 20 mil for the Championship's top scorer is probably fair, but whatever it is, 32, 33 mil for Villa? What do you do? Again, I understand it. We want options and stuff, but 33 mil on a player that, and I'm sorry, like maybe Watkins will prove me completely wrong. I'm sure he listens to this and will be, you know, be pinning my face to the dressing room wall, obviously. I'm of that profile. But, you know, when you do the famous old looking at a YouTube compilation, he looks like an average to good Championship striker. His technique, he's one of those like swings his foot at it, gets a big header on the odd sort of ball that gets lumped into the box that we don't really do anyway, type strikers, which is great. But, you know, I'd rather we sign Troy Deeney on a free transfer than spend £35 million on somebody like that. Yeah, so I don't take it as in, like, spend some fucking money, Levy. Like, and I'm not... You know, and people that listen to this now, I'm not like a Levy apologist. I'll criticise him when I feel the need to, but there's a difference between just fucking chucking money at anything and having some sort of measured approach to it. But what there isn't really an excuse for is not having anybody. And the thing I won't accept from Levy or from All or Nothing, that whatever his name is, Hitchens, is it, the head of recruitment?
Yeah.
How they gave it all this.
Absolutely hates his job.
It's more difficult than you think. It's like, I'm sure it is, mate, but it's your fucking job at the end of the day. You're telling me what Spurs can't, as you were saying, Spurs can't sign anyone. This idea that we can't get anybody to play second fiddle to Kane, because that's bollocks. You know, that is actually bollocks. It's disingenuous. You know, it doesn't have to be a Daka. It doesn't have to be kind of, you know, an up-and-coming player that wants to establish themselves, or somebody like Callum Wilson that wants to get back on the map. There are just players that can come in and do a job here and there, you know, and it's your job to find them. And you haven't done so for, what, 2-3 years now? So, yeah, whatever. Like, I just think, get it done. We need somebody. Look at the fixtures. Like, look at the pile-up. We need somebody. By all accounts, Troy Parrott went there. You know, and that's fine. Again, I don't, even in this situation, I don't begrudge just sending the lad out on loan for the greater good, because he looks like he's going to be a special player. And
I'd rather don't
rush somebody who doesn't potentially have the maturity to really make his claim now. You know, maturity is the thing that's often cited, right? That's the thing. It's people say behind the scenes he's still a bit, he's a kid, because he is a fucking kid. You know.
Yeah.
And I don't, you don't want to risk that. You know, let him get a few more airs on his chest and come back, and he'll be, you know, there to potentially even take the mantle when Kane does one or whatever, if that ever happens. Because he looks like he's in that same mould. It's almost like bizarre how much he is technique and composure looks like Harry Kane when you see some of these sort of training montages of him. But if he's not ready, I don't want to rush him. But what I do want is for Spurs to just sign anyone. My boss is actually a Watford fan. And sort of going back to what you were saying there is, I was very on board with Deeney. But he was like, mate, on a level. Because I was like, ah, but we'd only play him for 10 minutes here and there. He's like, mate, that's literally all we were doing by the end. And even then, he's shot. Like, he's just, like you say, his knees are packed in. He's done. Like, because I was sort of bought into the whole, like, oh, imagine him coming on and being a horror in the last 10 minutes of a North London derby. But it seems to be even...
Yeah, maybe a season ago. That's the thing. But he just kind of fell off, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, because, yeah, I mean, and you took, you know, Simba sort of Joe Hart-like personality where bellowing at people. I think it's clear from the documentary that goes a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't go everywhere. I don't want to talk about the documentary too much because it's been, as you say, done to death, but it is quite funny the editing sometimes when they're like, you know, either Harry or Hugo's like shouting at them and saying, come on, guys, we're going to do this. Then it cuts to them just like wandering around the pitch, letting Red Star Belgrade waltz past them.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
I do also wonder as well, it's all right to maybe bring in a two-time Premier League winner to shout them, but I think probably, and fair enough, you know, if you've got someone like Deeney in there who is a big personality in a club like a Watford or something, you bring him in and he starts trying to get a bit chippy with Son, Kane, so on and so forth, they'll be like, fuck off, mate, like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, like, you've won fuck all, you're a journeyman, you know, sharp.
Yeah.
You're just some bloke with a big gob that's decent at football. But I actually quite like Deeney. I think he comes across quite well.
I do really like him as well. Yeah, he speaks very well. He's very interesting. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but I think it's very just refreshing to kind of...
He was good on Louis Theroux's pod. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah,
but,
speaking of pods... Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, go on, mate. Go on.
Just say that Joe Hart on Nedumaduwa's pod as well was really good.
Yeah,
they did it just before or just after he kind of announced that he was coming to Spurs. That was again, a kind of an illuminating listen. Gives you a different context of somebody you thought you had pinned down as a certain personality type.
It's decent, wasn't it? I really liked it. It was just interesting to see him almost like reflect on the fact that, like, you know, he kind of still feels like he's a bit too alpha to really delve into it, but his sort of the way he brushed on the impact it had on his mental health and things like that, you think, fucking hell, man, like these, even guys like him, they're not impervious to life and to the scrutiny that they're under, you know.
But that's the fallacy of confidence, isn't it?
That
it's just, it doesn't actually exist anywhere. It's just people know how to kind of present it and wall themselves off. But once that kind of chips away, you know, there isn't actually any resilience in anyone.
No.
That's a bit fucking bleak, isn't it? Sorry.
mate, you're in the right place. You're in the right place. As we are talking about strikers, it doesn't seem to be officially announced yet, but pretty stratospheric signing for Tottenham, and I mean that genuinely.
Yeah.
In Alex Morgan coming to Tottenham, like, I think that's, I, you know, just hot takes and everything aside, I get the kind of angle where people say, oh, it's just a cynical PR move from Tottenham aligning us with a US audience. These things may and probably are all true, but I think there's a massive net good to this. I think there's a huge net good to raising the profile of the women's team and just women's football, the WSL, everything in general. Like, I was talking to Raj about this off air, and he basically gave it the perfect example of it's David Beckham going to the MLS in reverse, you know.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, and it's you know, I don't want to sound disingenuous, but it is exciting. You know, I don't watch women's football. I've got quite enough on my plate with the men's team, and I just haven't got space to take on any more anguish. But I just think it's a brilliant move for us. And as you say, cynical PR move, but she could have gone somewhere else. but she came to us. But does she know she's not going to be playing in this big stadium every week, though?
I reckon it feels like a scam.
I know, but I reckon,
given the kind of the circumstances around match days and such, I have a sneaking suspicion that the women's team will be playing in the stadium this season.
And they absolutely, they absolutely should. There's absolutely no reason. It is a bit embarrassing. I think we were saying yesterday, it's a bit embarrassing for Spurs that they've only just kind of acknowledged the women's team, because I don't think they even allowed them to be called Tottenham Hotspur ladies. Is that right?
I have no idea.
They were called Spurs. There's something like that.
It wouldn't surprise me, though. We haven't got very,
based on rumours,
good history, yes, if rumours to be believed of the women's team. So, you know, but hopefully this is, you know, it's a, like we say, it's a Caesar change, and whether it's cynical or not, there's a net good to it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's many problematic takes on what I'm saying. I'm just, you know, presenting it as I sort of see it. Nah, that's all.
I don't know. Not that we're an echo chamber or anything.
No,
sounds fine to me. But I just want to say, for how many weeks? Well, up until the end of like the transfer window, certainly. If this Alex Morgan thing gets announced like today or tomorrow, how many gammons are going to be making the joke about, huh, can she play back up to Kane? Ha ha, ha 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 ha. Weeks and weeks and weeks. That's why they need to sign a striker, just so people stop making that fucking joke.
I wonder if,
that's my PSA.
You'd think, I mean, there's that part of me that's like, yeah, I reckon the club will hold off on announcing that, but I think the club's grip on PR is not generally the best, is it? So,
yeah. Well, the Doherty signing with the Arsenal thing was pretty funny.
It was actually.
For them, they do all right. You know, with George, Kevin, and Kudu, when they had the whole "where is he? He's stuck in a hotel" thing. That was pretty funny.
I thought it was such a joyless reaction from a lot of Spurs fans as well to the Doherty thing. Like
joyless Spurs fans. Who ever heard of such a thing?
Get over you. This is what the club is nowadays. Shut up. We're signing gooners. Yeah, we do. Fuck off. Shut up. Like, these men are like, they're professional fucking footballers. He doesn't wear an Arsenal kit under his Tottenham kit. Do you know what I mean? And secretly tries to sabotage games. Like, grow up. You know,
grow up. That is.
That's coming from me. You know,
that's rich.
Yeah, exactly.
That is rich.
You know. But Alex Morgan, I genuinely I don't want to sound disingenuous. I'm not being sarcastic. I think it's brilliant for the club. I think it's great. It's a brilliant thing, and you know, I think it is, like you say, it's genuinely very exciting. So yeah, it's great. I guess, you know, sort of to come into the closing stages ahead of tomorrow, we are going to be playing Everton, a team who seem to, every single summer, spend a lot of money and make our fan base particularly angry. Look at what Everton are spending money on, yet consistently finish way behind us. We beat them all the time, yet we still don't seem to learn from that, in that maybe spending loads and loads of money doesn't always work out that well. But is it different this time?
No.
Do you know what I think?
Football has a very short memory about things. This happens, it's the same thing with Arsenal. They always seem like they're going to do something. All right, FA Cup, whatever, who cares? But Everton, again, they're still Everton in their DNA. And you know what that means as a Spurs fan. We're still Spurs in our DNA, no matter kind of what you can do. I'm not concerned about them at all. You know, they might beat us tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, beside the point, really. I don't suddenly see this like it's a new statement of intent from them that they're going to, you know, squeeze us out of the running for the top five, let alone top four or anything like that. It's unfortunately they're still Everton. And so, no, I'm not concerned. Again, I'm not saying that as to sort of like mug off the whole club, because we have lots of similarities, us and Everton, as every Spurs and Everton fan knows. So, you know, I know this game. I've seen this. I've seen us do it. I've seen other teams do it. I've seen Everton do it over and over again. All right, maybe they'll strike lucky one time, but I just don't think buying loads of new players, certainly in the kind of like the positions that they've bought them in, is going to suddenly create this amazing, well-oiled, functional team.
I agree.
They still have Michael Keane at the back, right?
Yeah, and I do agree with you. However, I do think the outlier here, the mitigating factor, is Ancelotti. I think that is low-key a very exciting prospect for the club. You know, if we in the respect that we kind of there is that rationality to the Mourinho. I think even people who are loath to admit that, you know, there's anything positive about bringing in Mourinho as a manager, people will recognise that he's been there, done it, and is still probably recognised as one of the greatest football managers of all time. Ancelotti's comparable, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if this is just... I'm going to contradict myself, but Ancelotti's gone to Everton. He's a great manager, but he's not like a miracle worker, and he's not at the peak of his powers. And again, I don't know a hell of a lot about Ancelotti's approach and what his kind of MO is for things, but you know, that Everton needs a complete DNA rewrite, like we are in the process of doing. You know, new stadium, and then but we're still the same little club in a massive golden cage, right?
Yeah.
And Everton are so far behind in that, in the terms of that progress, that again, it feels like I'm being harsh on them. I'm not, and you know, I enjoy it when they do well, as long as they're not doing better than us, because you know, it gives us some hope that some of these, in quotes, decent clubs are actually getting somewhere. But I'm not in any way sort of concerned about them. You can play this at the end of the season when they finish like 20 points above us, of course. But I don't know. At the moment, I can't get worried about things like this anymore, because this is what happens at the start of every season. Yeah. We start shitting ourselves about what other teams have done, when actually we're decent enough. You know, our club is an envious club at the minute. I know we have had a muck couple of seasons, you know, in the league, certainly, and whatever, but we're doing all right.
We're decent. We are solid.
We're decent. Yeah. We're decent.
And I think we need to sort of recognise that a bit more. It's, you know, you can't, you can only spend so long benchmarking yourself against teams like City, you know, really. And maybe the Pochettino era skewed our expectations somewhat. I still don't think it skewed it. I think it shifted them. And rightfully so, because skewed to me suggests that it was based on some sort of a falsehood, and I don't agree with that. I think Pochettino established something tangible and did take the club onto another level. As I feel that Levy has done to a degree, to give him his dues. Whether or not you like it, whether or not you like the machinations of modern football, they are here, they exist. And they're not unique to Tottenham Hotspur. Knocking down White Hart Lane, building a big stadium, having glossy brand partnerships. It's melty, it might not be what you grew up with, but it's what football is now. And Levy has aligned the club with modern football, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. Adapt
or die, right?
Yeah. And like you touched on there, we are still the little bird in the big golden cage, if you like, now. And maybe Pochettino, and this is where I have my kind of thoughts on Levy, is that maybe it is time for Levy to step back a bit. And it seems like he's done that a bit now.
It does.
Yeah, you know, he's definitely built the club from where we were, from being this kind of, you know, tin pot, mid-table Premier League team, that, you know, was always seen as a bit of a sleeping giant, but that was more about, you know, the fairy tales we told ourselves. We were shite. Like, we were shite before Enoch came in. And we really were. For the entirety of the Premier League, we were shite, you know.
And we weren't great before that. You know, it's 138 years, the club's birthday recently. We haven't won that many trophies.
No.
in 138 years. I know, like, the first, you know, 30 or 40 are write-offs because of wars or whatever, but we haven't, we aren't actually, like, pound for pound that successful.
No, Everton are miles bigger than us in terms of history. Everton have won, like, fucking, what, 4 or 5 league titles or something? Like, late as the 80s as well.
Oh, God. They're going to batter us tomorrow.
Well, I don't know. I'm not convinced that they're going to, you know, come out of nowhere and do something. I just think they might be a quietly good... They might be this season's Wolves. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I think they will have enough on their day to kind of upset some teams, but they'll still have those goosing it 2-0 you know, Leeds or something like that, right?
Rodriguez is very exciting. I think he's their Van der Vaart, actually. I think I can see a world very clearly where he scores a winner against us tomorrow. And he announces himself and then disappears for 5 games, you know?
Yeah. And how many years ago did we get Van der Vaart? So that's an excellent kind of comparison,
decade.
I think.
A decade ago. No.
Exactly. So that's, I think they are a decade. Again, there might not be a decade's worth of points between us.
No, I know what you mean, though.
In terms of them actually sort of mustering us out of the way in the long term.
Yeah.
I think they're miles away from it. I think Everton fans probably are aware of that as well. Again, it doesn't mean they can't beat us.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. West Brom can beat us. I'm so fucking annoyed they're back in the Premier League as well, because you just know dropped points already.
Yeah, and like, it's as much as, you know, Leeds are Leeds, I mean, it is going to be quite interesting to see them back, especially with Bielsa. But then you've got that completely tempered by the fact that West Brom are back.
Yeah.
How do they keep doing it?
Different managers,
different setups, different players. What?
Do you know what they are? They are the Chelsea of the Championship. That team that just like, because I always think this, I think Chelsea had one decent team, that early Mourinho team, where they actually looked like they were an attractive, contrary to belief about Mourinho's football, but like an attractive team to watch. A lot of personalities. There was that, even as a Spurs fan that detests them, there was that begrudging admiration for them on a certain level. But really, ever since then, they're just... Even, like, you know, the Conte season when they pipped us to the fucking title, 16-17, they were just boring. They came out of nowhere. They capitalised on the other big teams not really being there. And it's just what they do. And it just seems to be us, what West Brom are, you know. They're that team that knows how to play the Championship and then takes that step up, and then everyone's suddenly like, oh, fuck off, you're shite. Nobody wants you in, you know.
Just draining the life out of the room, the energy vampires of the Premier League.
They really are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Horrible.
Oh, where we got to go? The Hawthorns out, for fuck's sake.
But, I mean, that's it. Would you hazard a prediction?
For tomorrow?
Yeah.
It's a bit milquetoast to say 2-1 Spurs, isn't it? But I think 2-1 Spurs is decent.
Yeah.
Decent shout.
I'd go with that. 2-1 Spurs or 2-1 to Everton. I think that's sort of the way I can see it going either way. Mm. I guess as well, expanding on that, for the season itself, our aim, top four, you reckon?
I think, you know, top four would be massive. But personally, I just... You know, last two seasons, we've been terrible. We've performed terribly. Even when we've won most times, we've performed terribly. And this is not, oh, I want us to play the Spurs way or anything. I just don't want to have us lose of a weekend, you know? I just want to watch us a functional 2-0, 3-1 win, and that's it. No, don't have to worry about it. That's not an expectation, that's a hope. But that's kind of what I want from this season. And doing that will get us up the league. And I think that, it shouldn't be too much
just,
to ask.
Just a bit of football that can be quite fun as you're wrapping your lips around a jar of pale ale.
Oh, right, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Slapping fucking steady chicken wings in your mouth.
But,
you know, there you go.
Wonderful. Well, that's all I want.
All right, Phil. Well, thanks for coming. I hope you've enjoyed your maiden... Studio.
I have absolutely loved every moment of this.
it's just talking to me, isn't it? It's just, it's a joy. it's a ray of sunshine, you know.
Yeah.
But no, thanks for coming on, mate. It's been a pleasure. And let's hope the lads can do the business tomorrow. Come on, you Spurs.
Yes, that.
Lilac wine is sweet and heady like my love. Lilac wine, I feel unsteady. Listen to me, I cannot see clearly. Isn't that he coming to me nearly here?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.